It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro. Backstage with the golden grace. Tales from the stands to the batter's cage. The kind of stories that'll keep you engaged. Backstage with the golden grace. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Philly's Backstage. Tom Burgoyne, John Burgoyne. I have a nephew, John Burgoyne, but it's John Brazier, right, John?
How long have we known each other for?
Yeah, only 100 years, but we are broadcasting in the Phillies radio booth, and our guest, Kevin, I'm really surprised you were able to find your way to the Phillies radio booth. You've been up here once or twice. Kevin Gregg, everybody. Director of Public Relations, right?
Vice President of Baseball Communications, and thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on, Tom.
Well, when did you get promoted to Vice President?
No, by the way, it should be, we talked about this off the air, it should be Vice President of Opportunity, because he is an opportunist in the capital word, usually in the capital letter O, because let me just give you a little progression. Kevin, stop me if I'm correct, all right? First of all, we want to get into the whole, you grew up with a celebrity father. Your dad, Eric Gregg, was a famous umpire in Major League Baseball from Philadelphia, right? But we're not going to get, you go to James Madison, you work for an intern for the Sixers, then you work as an intern for the Phillies, then you go back to the Sixers, right? Mm-hmm. And then here's where the opportunity comes in. And then you work for the Phillies. In 2007, you get hired, right? Full-time, yep. The Phillies.
Yep.
And what happens in 2008?
Phillies win the World Series.
All right. So then you work up until 2013. You leave. You go to the Red Sox.
Left after 2012. 12
season.
Boston Red Sox.
Right.
Yeah.
You go to the Red Sox because you know the Phillies are on the downswing, right? Because we're going to go on a long losing streak. And you realize that the Red Sox have an upswing right there. They got Dave Dombrowski. They got a lot of things going for them. But what happens in 2013 after you join the Red Sox?
Red Sox won the World Series.
Okay. So then you're like, okay, if they have a longer window than most, I'm not going to get out right away. What happens in 2018?
Red Sox won the World Series.
Right, you get out of 2000, but all of a sudden now you realize the Red Sox are starting to go downhill. They did all they could do in that span. So you know what? I'm going to go back to my roots, Philadelphia, where I started, because I know they just signed Bryce Harper. They're going to do really well. So then what happens in 2022?
They go to the World Series.
Yes, and then you figure they still have the same nucleus. You're going to stay with the Phillies. What happened last year?
We almost made it to the World Series.
He knows what he's doing, John. He's got it all mapped out.
The timing is impeccable.
It just happened to work out.
I heard you have your resume in with the Eagles right now.
They don't need my help. No. Honestly, it just worked out that way. I could not be more fortunate to have been a part of both organizations at those times. And I've got nothing to do with this success. I'm just happy to be a part of it, though.
Well, listen, you are vice president now, and which is great, but you did start here as an intern, and I forgot that you were in the merchandise.
So what was your job back then?
Honestly, my job was to help Eric Pesch and Scott Brandreth and John Hollinger and Penny DiMuzio in the storeroom, in the back of the vet there where that storeroom was. You know, we would fulfill online orders from Phillies.com for merchandise and stuff. But my biggest thing was passing out all the giveaways to all the front office employees.
Right, because everyone gets two of each giveaway.
Every Steve Carlton bobblehead, every Mike Schmidt bobblehead, every Jimmy Rollins, whatever, Jim Tomey, this or that. And the last year of the vet, there was a ton of giveaways.
Wait, so you're like Santa Claus too, because everyone likes seeing Kevin Gregg, because that means you're getting two free gifts.
Yeah, and I got to network and meet everyone in the organization that way. So it worked out great for me. But one bonus part was like, you know, a skill that you didn't think you'd have to learn was Eric Pesch and I, we used to have to drive forklifts all around Veterans Stadium, unload the trucks from all the giveaways. So I drove forklifts back then too.
Yeah, all right, wow. But let's go, before we get into the career, Tom, let's go back. Because as I said earlier, that you're the son of a famous umpire, Eric Gregg, Philadelphian, Eric, your dad was from Philadelphia. What was that like growing up with a celebrity dad?
You know, it was funny because, you know, he certainly his personality, like he loved, you know, to engage with fans, and he loved baseball, and, you know, he loved the attention, you know, which is kind of funny because umpires traditionally are not supposed to be like in the limelight. But he, you know, he had a great personality. People gravitated towards him. And my life was just, I had baseball all around me and I loved every part of it. I mean, I would go to spring training. I would go all over the National League because he was a National League umpire back then. The umpires were split. So I'd take road trips with him. I would come down to the Vet all the time. We'd go to Shea Stadium, all the parks he would drive to. And I just spent so much time there, get to meet other umpires, get to meet other players. And just that's why I'm in baseball and that's why I love baseball because he did.
Tom, I don't know if you knew this too, but Eric Gregg was the youngest hired age-wise, Major League. He was 24 years old when he became a Major League Baseball umpire.
How about that? I did not know that. Yeah. But he was larger than life, and you know, he had his, of course, fun with fans, with the Fanatic, you know, legendarily, and started with Dave Raymond, and then I used to love when Eric was doing a game because he literally would come up to me and ask, "What song are we dancing to tonight?"
Right, right.
I'm like, "All right." He was a big. He was like the Fanatic. Loved his disco and his Philly soul music.
And one of the great stories. I'm sure, Kevin, you've heard this. One of the great stories was Lenny Dykstra. You know where I'm going with this one?
Yeah, I saw it the other day.
Yeah. You want me to tell it or you want to tell it?
You tell it.
All right,
fine.
So Lenny Dykstra was told by Jim Fregosi after a game on Saturday that, hey, you've got tomorrow's a day game, Sunday, you have the day off, right? Now, it's the middle of summer, and the Vet turf was probably 120 degrees, right, on a hot, you know, July day, whatever. So Lenny, you know, I don't think he needed any excuse because Lenny went out knowing that he's not playing the next day. You know, I guess he had his, you know, the fun that Lenny has, right? So Lenny comes in, I'm sure, not feeling so great with little cobwebs in his head. And I guess Milt Thompson said he can't go because he's got an injury, I guess, that took place overnight. And so Fregosi went to Lenny and said, "You're in the lineup." He's like, "What?" You know, threw up a stink. You gave me the night off. I know, but things changed, you know, because Milt has to come in. So Lenny on his first at bat, Eric Gregg being the home umpire, the first pitch is a ball or a strike. And Lenny's like, "What was that? What, dude, that was so far out." Bobby screaming to Eric. Gets out of the box. He's screaming. He's cursing. He's having a tantrum. And your dad was basically with his arms crossed, was staring at him. And Lenny was going on for like a minute. Maybe not that long, but I'm going to say a minute for the story. He was going off on him. And then finally, Lenny, I guess, stopped. And your dad said, "Lenny, if you got to be here, I got to be here. Get back in the box. I'm not throwing you out." Right?
Exactly. Yeah. No, I've heard that story so many times. It's funny. It's funny to see him tell it the other day. And but yeah, I mean, I think umpires back then, they were a little different too. I think, you know, the era's changed. You know, I think the supervision they have now, it's a little bit, you know, I don't know that they are able to interact with the players like they did back then. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, my dad kind of made a name for himself with was doing that back then. And, you know, I'm sure some, maybe not all players were, you know, interested in that, but, you know, from the stories that I hear from current broadcasters now, former players that I've run into over my career, you know, I've always heard those types of things about my dad. So it's kind of fun to hear those.
And how about for you? Some of your earliest memories, you know, following your dad, even whether it was going to the Vet or maybe on the road, is there anything that stands out?
You know, I'd say there were so many times where we would just, like, maybe we wouldn't pay attention to the game, but like after the game, we'd run all throughout the Vet. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike DiMuzio would be chasing us. We'd be in the bullpen. You know, we'd be running on the field in the outfield. We'd bring friends down, kind of hanging out in the dugout. There was one time I was funny because I was with some of my friends from school, and we were throwing a ball against the wall in the service tunnel out there by the Vet. And for whatever reason, maybe he had a tough game or something, but I remember Mariano Duncan saying to us, like, "Hey, man," like he was annoyed with us. We're like, "What are you kids doing throwing, you know, I'm trying to walk home or you're gonna walk out of here." And he was just like kind of frustrated with this. Like, "What are you guys doing here?" And I was like, "Oh," and so I told my dad, I was like, "Hey, Mariano Duncan yelled at us down the
court." And that wouldn't be the first time a player yelled at you,
no,
in your career.
It was preparing me for later on in life.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, were you sensitive to some of the criticism maybe that if people were booing the umpire or specifically, you know, were you sensitive to that if they were getting on your dad?
Yeah, good question. I learned early on before, obviously, when we were older, we could go to games by ourselves. my mom would bring us because my dad would be at the park super early. But when we sat in the stands, you know, my mom would teach us like, hey, you know, you got to ignore that stuff. That's part of the job. You know, those are fans. They want their team to win. You know, they're going to just call things out or boo or yell or whatever, say certain things. But there were times when I was younger, you know, we'd be sitting there. I forget what section was, but right behind home plate off to like the, you know, the third base side. And you'd hear something from behind you. I'd want to, you know, 8-year-old me would turn around, look at that guy like, you know, you're looking at like an adult. What are you going to do as an 8-year-old, you know?
Right.
So, but you got to kind of, you know, just understand that it's part of the game and it happens. But there were times where my brothers and I, we would talk to my dad after the game, like, hey, you know, I don't know how, you know, I think you might have missed that guy at first base. He might have been out, you know, or something like that. But, and, you know, he'd always tell us, you know, you have the benefit of replay and slow motion. And, like, I'm doing it in real time, you know, and they're training. You know, they're hearing for things that we're not hearing at first base.
Right.
You know, that they're looking for certain things, you know, whatever. But no, it was fun, you know, but in those moments, it could be tough to listen to.
See, Tom and I both had the job of, at one point, of doing the music and sound effects, right? So I followed Tom, and we used to have fun with the umpires, your dad included. So for Joe West had one of the umpire, legendary umpire, he had a bad country album that he put out, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah, I remember.
We used to play like the worst song on the album, and he'd look up and just shake his head, you know, basically saying, couldn't you play one of the good songs as if there was one?
Right.
But I know your dad and a couple other people, like, we do it to any umpire, but if they, you know, every time they brush off the home plate, and right when they do that, we had a sound effect of like a pants splitting.
That's comedy, John.
And they'd look up and like shake their head.
Well, right. It really is a fine line that your dad and some of those other, as you mentioned, Kevin, the umpires were different back then. They were a little bit, had bigger personalities that were able to show through. I think they teach them not to do that now specifically. Mm-hmm. But that is a fine line, you know, where your dad could pull it off, though. Like he's out there having fun, and yet, you know, not taking it, that part of it too seriously.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, that's the one thing I hear a lot from people when they, you know, older fans, you know, all throughout the game, like, I really admired your dad's personality, the way he did his job, and, you know, he was so much fun. Like, you know, especially because there were some of those years in the 90s or in the late 80s, the Phillies weren't as competitive on the field. And, you know, even though these are Philadelphia Phillies fans, they would say, hey, I always remember, it was always fun seeing your dad do a Phillies game at the Vet or whatever. So those things that just kind of bring you, those are nice, memories to hear and things that kind of make you jog your memory as well. And it's cool when people express
now
he
worked a World Series. It was the Padres, right?
No, it was 1989. It was the Battle of the Bay, Giants and the Athletics, and when the earthquake happened.
Earthquake,
right.
Yeah, we were all out there for that. My siblings, my older brother and I, we had to go back with our grandparents after game three.
So you were in the stadium when the earthquake hit?
Yeah, at Candlestick Park, yeah.
And could you feel it? Could you know what was
absolutely.
Going on then?
I had no idea what was going on. We had just taken our seats. I was 9 years old, and I remember just sitting there and moving side to side in my seat. And I remember the iron, what do you call it? Armrests hitting my sides.
Wow.
I was like, what's going on? And my mom started screaming. She was terrified immediately. She knew what it was.
Yeah.
And I remember there were fans right behind me up in the deck, right on top of the press box there. They were like, yeah, screaming. And I was like, what's going on? Because my mom is crying and, like, you know, terrified. And some fans were fired up. And soon, shortly after that, we realized it was an earthquake.
And then what happened? You guys basically exited, you know, try to do it as calmly as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
They had all the players and umpires' families and staff families that were associated with the team or the umpires go onto the playing field and exit, you know, from wherever.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that day, that night, was that the freeways to leave were just a parking lot. The cars were just off.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of funny story about my dad. I don't know who the umpire's room attendant was, but now we had my grandparents, my mom, myself, and my older brother. And somehow my dad finagled bringing the entire umpire room food spread with us because we just sat in the parking
right.
lot. And we were.
And what was the spread?
I remember there just being this big platter of like nice. Shrimp cocktail and all that stuff. So we ate that for dinner as we waited to get back to our hotel. And we didn't get back to the hotel until about like 2 in the morning.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
That's a veteran move right there.
Right. Yeah.
That is.
Yeah. Well, I used to love, as you know, I've told you many times, I used to love your dad. And I'd see him at Chickies and Pete's when Chickies mm-hmm. and Pete's basically opened.
Sure.
And your dad would be in there with a big cigar and he'd have the hat on. I can picture him right now. And he'd be holding court and just everyone would be, he's somebody that just gathered people. People would want to be around Eric Gregg.
Yeah.
And then he worked at Chickies and Pete's at the Eagles games.
Yep.
And I used to see him at the where he'd work. You know, more on the kind of towards the end zone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I remember that spot. Yeah.
If anybody from Chicken and Pete's listening, you didn't hear this, but sometimes he'd help me get a beer without standing in line. sorry, Pete.
Yeah, and he would hold court over at the Vet. Yeah. And then also when we moved over here, I'm looking straight ahead at Ashburn Alley out there. He had a little stand out there too. He would just there'd be times where I'd go by to see him when I was interning here. And I thought he was like serving a customer, but there's like four or five people around him, but he was just telling stories. So people would just love to hear baseball stories.
Yeah,
from.
It was
so
pretty cool.
He enjoyed that part.
The fans got a chance to, get close to Eric.
Now you went into baseball. You played baseball in high school, and but your brother was a lacrosse goalie.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
How did your dad let that happen?
Yeah, honestly, going to Episcopal Academy, big lacrosse school program there, a lot of interest of on the main line there. And so he got into lacrosse, but my younger, not that he didn't like baseball, but he just wanted to play lacrosse.
Yep.
And he went on to play, he played in college at Gettysburg College. But I was always into baseball. I was just huge, into baseball, and that's all I ever wanted to do.
But you got into, public relations and that's, I'm really curious about that. First of all, when you were working with the Phillies, you worked a little with Larry Schenck, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Was there a point in your career when you thought, PR is going to be my route to take? And did the working with the Baron have anything to do with that?
Yeah, no, definitely. I was undecided in college on what I wanted to major in. And then it took me a little bit and I was like, let me do sport management. And then I started taking some PR classes and I said, I think this might suit my personality.
Yeah.
And to graduate, JMU, I needed to do an internship and my advisors down there told me to go back up here in a major sports market, and try to get my foot in the door. And, I used some help from my dad who knew, as Billy King,
yep.
then the GM of the Sixers. And he just got me an informational interview at the Sixers. And I did that one summer and they put me into PR and I said, wow, this is where I think I really want to be. And this is where I think I can excel. And from there I said, okay, I like PR, but I love baseball. How do I get into baseball? And I came across the street and I remember, and I dropped my resume off with Kelly Addario downstairs and I talked to Larry Schenck and, they said, well, we don't have anything right now, but maybe it's best for you to get your foot in the door. And that's how I got into merch with Scott Brandreth.
Right.
And then I just worked my way up. And I'll never forget, I never had an interview with Larry Schenck. I was waiting for an interview, waiting for an elevator. The elevator right next to Kelly at the
Vet. Yeah, yeah.
And we were just talking. And I had been there for a few months already. And he said, how would you like to intern for us next year at CBP? And I was like, I would love to. I was like, when do I have to interview? And he's like, we already know everything there is.
Awesome.
So that's how I got into PR. But right away, working with Lee Tobin, Greg Castriotto, Christine Negley, all the people that were here. Gene was even still here, even though I think Gene Dias was in community relations, but I knew he had a PR background. Got to learn from so many people, and I just loved it.
Now, you also worked in basketball, too. So, what the difference between working PR for an NBA team and working PR for a baseball team? What, for those that don't realize, obviously you have less players in NBA.
Right. I mean, the players and the schedule are the two biggest differences, I would say. The timed games in the NBA are one thing. Back then, the Sixers were a pretty good draw. I mean, Allen Iverson was still with the Sixers.
So you're saying I should have added that in the very beginning of my monologue about the opportunity right there?
Well, they did make the playoffs. They did. They never really went that far. Yeah.
So that doesn't count.
Yeah.
In your book. It doesn't,
yeah, right. But no, it's a pretty big difference. The roster, you got some megastars in the NBA. you know, especially having Allen Iverson. You know, Andre Iguodala just started. He was a rookie then when I was there. It's there's some differences. I mean, the amount of media, the fact that you have, you know, shoot arounds and practice only days, you know, you might go 3 or 4 days without a game. You know, it's so different. You know, the schedule.
And it focused probably on, like, just more a couple people. Like, right now, you know, I'm sure Embiid and Maxey are getting, you know, I'm sure some of the other guys for the current team are getting something. But it's really Embiid and Maxey are getting. Whereas now with baseball, you know, you've got Harper gets a lot, obviously. But you've got the starting pitcher. You got Schwarber. You got Castellanos. You got tons of people that it could be the given night getting the media attention.
Yeah, absolutely. We have the current roster has a lot of guys that get a lot of attention. You know, like marquee players, as you mentioned. So. And that's a good thing, you know, for us, because it doesn't put the burden on that one guy to do everything every night or every time they go out and perform. So, but yeah.
You said it kind of suits that this world suits your personality, and you really do have to have a calmness, rational thinking, solve problems. Yeah, you know, I think you're Captain Cool. You know, it's like when the world is falling down around, you know, when you have an issue that you have to deal with. And certainly with the Alec Boehm situation, I know you've you know, we've talked about that a lot where, you know, he said, I hate this place, and you were kind of right on it. So when he came off the field, I know you talked
to
him.
Walk us through what happened there exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, it's funny. So I was watching the game up here, and I saw it happen. I was like, wait, did that really happen? And then surely within minutes on social media, it just starts picking up. And every, you know, even the sites that don't really follow baseball that much, you know, were reposting it and stuff. And I was like, oh boy, this is gonna be a problem. So I remember I was chatting with Bonnie Clark, my colleague in communications here. And I made her aware of what was happening, and we talked about it, and then we were just like, you know, we need to get to him, to Alec, and just this is best
can't fester,
to
address
immediately. Mm-hmm. This is best to tackle it head on and be accountable. And as we saw, you know, he handled it appropriately, and not only did it not become a story,
but did you have to
positive?
You had to talk to him ahead of time.
Yeah.
And basically, and what did you without really divulging too much, but what did you tell him?
Well, I made him aware of what happened because he wasn't aware of what happened. He was not aware that the cameras caught it and that it was blowing up.
Yep.
You know, so he was like, oh man. So we just talked about it. I was like, listen, you know, this is what I think it's best for you to address this and handle it head on. I don't think anyone would believe that you were trying to say something else.
Right.
And he understood that. And I was right there beside him. And when the media came in, and I think it was Jim Salisbury who asked him the question, and you know, we've seen the answer.
He's accountable.
He handled it. Yeah. And that's just, you know, such a great lesson for so many athletes. And I'm sure it was probably in every team's media training from them, that point on.
Well, yeah. And so first of all, had you ever had a situation like that before?
You know, I don't think one that quite like that, where it was, this is clear as day as to what was said. This is how quickly it spread and how far it spread.
But another situation where you knew, hey, we got to nip this in the bud, get ahead of it, or.
Yes. Where it's important to be accountable and take responsibility for your actions.
When you can, because some have legal implications where you're not.
Sure.
You know, you want to get ahead of it, but you can't. Mm. You got to address a legal issue, or you're not. Somebody else has to address the legal issues first, like domestic violence.
Sure.
Situation, mm-hmm. right? That's something that you can tell somebody, but at the same time, you really can't, because they either have to go through legal channels or has to work it out that way first.
Yeah. This was obviously, you know, this was not like a matter as serious as that, fortunately, for everyone involved. But, you know, the best thing we tell guys to do is, you know, if it's more so for maybe like a physical mistake, you know, a ball goes through your legs or whatever, you know, but it applies also in this situation as well. Make a one-day story a one-day story by addressing it, because if you don't address it, someone else has to address it for you.
Yeah, and now do you, will you talk to young players and give them some media training to that effect?
Well, with prospects, too, right?
Yeah.
With prospects. Before they even become the major leagues.
Yeah, that's, it's been, since I've been here, I've done a couple sessions now. We do, you know, Rob Thompson will ask us to talk to the younger players in spring training. And that has made it in the last couple times we've done it. So that was in last spring training, media training, and then the prospect seminar we had at the end of 2022. just because, you know, that thing with Alec Wilm happened in April of 2022.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's like, and I can't tell you how many PR people around baseball I heard from, like, hey, I hope you don't mind, but we're going to use this as media training. I'm like, wow,
yeah, you have to.
It's a great teaching moment.
Now, one of the things, you know, that can get quickly, especially in this town, is that, you know, if there's someone gets booed or a teammate gets booed, someone might want to defend their teammate and say to the, you know, surrounding media, because they're going to be asked about it, right? And so what do you think about Shane Victorino getting booed and you're Ryan Howard? Well, you might want to stick up for that. If you're Ryan, you might want to stick up for Shane. But when you address the booing situation, no one's going to win, right? No one's going to win. And, you know, and again, it's luckily we haven't had that. I think there was an issue with Shane way back when, but Shane quickly got around it. But now it's funny because that incident with Alec Boehm was almost the last time Philadelphia was getting a bad reputation and nipped it in the bud real quick. Yeah. But then look what's happened right now, right? It's the exact opposite. So talk about like when there's something good that happens, like the Trey Turner situation from a PR perspective.
Yeah, I think what that really did, what was so great about that was that it showed – it did two things. It showed to our players how much, and other athletes in the city too, I think, how much, how passionate these fans are for their athletes and for their teams, but also how much they want to win. And just by showing a guy like that support, who signed a big contract and, you know, clearly was not playing up to his capabilities, to say, hey, we're with you. We want you to succeed. You know, like, we think that we sense that you're maybe, you know, stressing or pressing a little too much. So let's let you calm down. And you can see after that, he took off and his performance took off, and like the effect it had afterwards. I mean, guys like Castellanos and Stott were talking about how, you know, you hear so many negative things about Philadelphia fans, but like, what about this? You know, right. You've seen it. The other markets have tried to emulate it, you know, with the whole standing ovation thing. And it's just been great. But, and also showed a national audience, like, that's always so quick to just kind of trash Philadelphia fans, like, hey, you know, that's an old narrative.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, we talked a little bit about how we have marquee names on this team, but we also have great leadership in that clubhouse. It's, first of all, it's got to make your job a little bit easier, right?
Yeah.
I know John and I, we've always talking about the 93 team on this podcast, always talking about Darren Dalton and his role on that team as being the guy, you know, they'd all go in a trainer's room. Darren would be the guy to go out to address the media, or he'd be the one assigning, hey, you know, Lenny, you know, you got to go out. And now, do you see that with certain players on our team who've taken that role?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that they'll assign guys in the way that maybe Dutch did, but I think, or what I've seen, and our media would attest to this too, is guys like Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, Castellanos, Rhys Hoskins. I'm trying to think. I hope I'm not forgetting anyone.
JT.
They'll talk. They're out there. I mean, there's so many times where it was funny, like in the playoffs, like we'd have these big games and every single one of our players would talk, all of them, you know, and every day you got, you know, MLB works with you to put players in the interview.
You're saying talking to the media
yep.
that are constantly there. Out there.
Yep.
And again, that sounds easy to hear, but you know, you talked about the difference between baseball and other sports. Baseball, they are here. Literally the media, you know, we don't have days off for the most part.
Right.
And so if it's, they're here for batting practice, they're in the dugout or on the field, and then clubhouse opens up right after batting practice, right? Yep. Then it closes down, and then clubhouse is open after the game. So it's basically three huge access points, right?
Yeah, well, it's two. It's just pregame. So there's
right.
more
Right,
I
guess pregame, post-game.
BP,
right.
But yeah, pregame, post, yeah. And so there's a lot of time. There's a lot of time in there, and but our guys, like, they want to be accountable. They want to accommodate the media and do what they need to do. And that may not be the same guy every night, but that's when you have that many marquee guys, you know, maybe it's just Castellanos and Turner tonight. Or maybe it's Schwarber and Harper tonight. Maybe it's Hoskins, you know, but they've been great in that regard, and it sets a great example to the younger players.
Right, because as I say, it could be, if you had a bad leader, let's say the best player was a bad leader or bad guy, right? That can trickle down and affect the whole clubhouse.
Absolutely.
Because the young guys are watching that, then the young guys become... they become that when they get older, because that's the only thing they know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, I was very fortunate from my introduction to the team, really, in 2022. I talked to them a little bit about media and spring training, and I didn't know what was going to happen, but Bryce Harper stood up into the whole room and said, you know, hey, let's support Kevin, Chris, and Bonnie and everything they're doing. You know, talking to media is part of our job, especially in a city like Philadelphia.
It's huge.
And like from that point on,
yeah,
like
that's
you
huge.
Have the best player on the team saying that.
Yeah. Now, did you have that when you worked PR with the Red Sox? I'm imagine that Ortiz maybe, or was it? I guess Nomar before that.
Guy like Dustin Pedroia.
Pedroia, right?
I think when you have, I think first of all, everyone that goes to Boston understands what you're getting into when it comes from a media perspective. And I was there at a time where they had so many successful homegrown players that came up through the system, and that's all they knew.
Right.
You know, Jackie Bradley, Mookie Betts, you know, Andrew Benintendi, you know, John Lester, you know, those guys all knew it. You know, they didn't know anything else. So they did their jobs, and there were some rocky times every now and then, but like they got it. You know,
how hard was it to work for the Red Sox though, Kev? You know, you grow up in Philly, you're all Phillies, and then all of a sudden you're working for another team. I could never work for the Mets, John. I'm sorry, I just couldn't do it.
I was just saying I could do when you asked that question. I said I could do the Red Sox. I couldn't
maybe.
Do the Mets.
Did you have to also like kind of learn their history a little bit and brush up? And I would think you did, right?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely took some time, but my experience there was great. They welcomed me, and I'm so happy to have been a part of it. It's definitely a different feeling being like, you know, look, the Phillies are nothing to sneeze at, but there's something about like the Boston Red Sox. They're a cornerstone franchise of MLB, and of all the history that they have, and so being a part of that was really, really cool. But you know, it's once you're there, you know, once you get added to that organization, or even here, you feel like you're part of the team, and like it becomes easy to pull for them and support, you know, them, what's going on. But now, of course, if we ever match up against them, I want to sweep them every time we play them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Did you have any crossover with Tito then? Obviously, you
no, work. No. His final year was 12. No, sorry, it was 11.
Right.
Then they had Bobby Valentine as manager in 12, and then John Farrell was the manager in 13. And I didn't get to work with Dave until the middle of 2015.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
Dave Dombrowski.
Well, that's the other thing too. Now you've had two stints with Dave Dombrowski.
Yeah.
Talk about what it's like, what Dave Dombrowski's like, because technically you work for him.
Yep.
So what is working with Dave Dombrowski like?
Dave is great. Honestly, he's been a huge supporter of me, and I know other PR people and his other stops as well. He really gives us, he affords us he respects the job that we do. So he understands that we need information. We need to be in the know of what the team is doing because we could be, you know, asked by media what's going on. So he does a great job of anticipating what's coming down the pike for us, makes us aware of stuff. And it's just, he's approachable. He's easy for us to talk to when we need information, and not just Dave, but his staff too, Sam and Ned, Jorge, you know, Ani, all of them. So, he's been awesome. He's been very consistent. It's great that he's always around the team, so you can always see him. You can always get a hold of him. He's been, you know, he's going to the Hall of Fame for sure. I think, you know, he's the first or the only head of a baseball operation to take four different teams to the World Series.
He always has the same pleasant demeanor.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
like I've worked with a lot of GMs that just, you know, rise and fall with the team. Mm. Right, you can see their emotion. You know, you basically looking at him, you know where the team is at that given point.
Yeah.
But Dave Dombrowski always has like this nice, gentlemanly smile on his face, and hey John, hey Dave,
yeah, absolutely,
right, just very chill. And
no, look, he wants to win,
of course, you know, of course. I didn't mean it like that.
Yeah absolutely.
And Sam too's got that same
Sam
approach,
does too,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Who are the more fun guys in the clubhouse, not the leaders, but like more like the guy you really enjoy or watching or talking to? You know, obviously I'm looking at it from the outside, and we had Garrett Stubbs on our podcast, and obviously he's watching him dance the celebrations. That's the first person that comes to my mind. But who are more of the fun guys down there?
Honestly, he's the first person I thought of when you said that. Stubbs, great. Brandon Marsh is great.
Yep.
I got to go back to some guys, my previous Philly stint, but, you know, Ryan Howard, Shane Victorino, Jimmy Rollins, those guys were fantastic. You know, just the life of the clubhouse and just always ready to crack a joke. I laughed so much with Ryan Howard when I first started here. You know, we had very similar sense of humor. Those are the guys who come to mind. I got to think of some more guys, but there's just, you know, having good guys goes a long, long way. And like when I think about the current team, like Kyle Schwarber is just one of the best human beings that I've ever dealt with in baseball. So having him in the clubhouse is fantastic.
And it's funny, like the pitchers are usually the quiet ones, right? So you've got Zach Wheeler's kind of quiet, right?
And yeah.
Aaron
yeah.
Nola's kind of laid yeah. back and chill, and
yeah.
right? They kind of yeah. let everyone else do the
Cole too. Yeah, Roy was super serious all the time.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Cliff Lee liked to have fun. Papelbon.
Oswald's kind of quiet.
Yeah, he was quiet.
Joe Bland's quiet.
Yeah, Joe was quiet. Yeah, Brett Myers was not quiet.
Brett Myers not quiet. He made up for all these other guys.
Well, right. And you're also around celebrities. I know John always isn't, but you two, is there anybody in your years where you've kind of been like, wow, I can't believe I met that guy or got excited to
That's
meet?
That's a good, oh man, I'm not prepared for that.
plus, he probably became somewhat immune by being around his dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Being sure. Having Mariano Duncan yes. yell at you.
Right? Yeah.
I love Duck, by the way. Let me just tell you a quick story. Yeah. We brought in Hootie and the Blowfish. This is 1994. Hootie and the Blowfish just became huge. So I bring in Darius Rucker and the whole band, and I must have told somebody ahead of time. So they put, you know, only want to be with you, like on the big boom box in the clubhouse. So we're all in there, and I'm introducing everybody, and Mariano Duncan comes in, has no idea what's going on. He goes, hey, who put this crap on? Turn this crap off. And everyone's giving him the look like, Mariano, it's them. Don't say anything.
John, I remember because I was in the clubhouse, and I'm passing through, and you introduced me. I'm like, hey, Hootie, how you doing? Hey, you know, he shook my hand. And when we left the clubhouse, John was like, yeah, he doesn't like to be called Hootie.
Right. Well, then, and Lenny Dykstra, literally, I introduced him to Lenny Dykstra, and I can hear Lenny talking two doors down. Or like after I introduced him, he said, and someone said, Lenny, who are these guys? And I can hear Lenny say, dude, it's the Hooters.
The Hooters. Anybody, though, Kev, maybe a Hootie? I'm trying to think.
Who would have met? I mean,
because celebrities do kind of.
There's some.
Jamie Foxx, were you there when Jamie Foxx came in?
I met Jamie Foxx. I met David Beckham.
Yeah. Bruce Willis.
He was here. I didn't meet
him. You weren't here for Bruce?
No. Gosh, there's so many other people.
Oh, that's right. You weren't here for Bruce.
No. I'd say at Fenway, there was a lot. There was a lot of them.
Yeah.
Mary J. Blige sang the anthem a couple times.
Well, you had the Papelbon's band. Dropkick Murphys,
yeah,
right?
Those guys were always there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Gosh, no one really. A lot of times, other athletes. I met some other. There were two big time golfers that I would have to text. Jordan Spieth was one.
Okay.
And what's his name?
Well, especially when you win a World Series,
Koepka or something.
Brooks Koepka. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there anybody you were completely intimidated by? Like somebody that? Because I can tell you, like I stumbled a little, and I deal with celebrities all the time. It's part of my job.
Yes.
And I remember the one time where the only time I ever got tongue-tied was, and it's such a random celebrity, but I'm a huge fan of Spinal Tap and Freakin', you know.
Oh, right.
Christopher Guest. Christopher Guest. I'm talking to Nigel Tufnel from Spinal Tap, and I love that movie. And literally, I introduced myself to him, and I was going a mile a minute. That I remember telling myself, slow down.
You know how to slow down, John. Who are you kidding?
Now that you say that, that reminds me of one. The biggest one where I was not necessarily starstruck, but just totally nervous to the point I was sweating, was that, you know, the first 2019 MLB did that London series for the first time.
Yeah.
And so it was the Yankees and Red Sox in London at London Stadium where West Ham plays. And the commissioner of baseball walks in, Rob Manfred walks in with Harry and Meghan. For some reason.
Sure. It's royalty.
I was told to introduce them to the team.
Wow. Huh.
And I remember, like, afterwards.
Were you worried sweating because of the protocol or because both, just their stature?
I had to have their title down.
Right.
And just introduce them to the team. And I'm like, and in front of the Red Sox owner, the Red Sox president, CEO, Dave Dombrowski,
I'm starting to sweat.
Manager. And I was like, you know, and I think I
would have screwed it up. I got Kevin's title wrong. And then, this is Harry. Right. And,
they're
it somehow.
Exactly. The Royal Duke and Duchess of York.
This is the prime
The Royal Duke and Duchess of York.
Yeah, this is the Boston Red Sox. And I later ended up seeing what the Yankees did, and Aaron Boone had introduced them. So I said to Alex Cora after, who was the manager, and I was like, why didn't you have to do this? They're like, no, we wanted it to be you.
Yeah, because they didn't want to do it.
Why did
put
I
the pressure on? Yeah.
So there's video of it out there somewhere. I don't think you can
did
see
you get
sweaty,
a chance to talk to them a little bit? Or
I mean, just a tiny bit. Just tell them a little bit about the team. But like, you know, but still, like, I mean, my gosh, that was just.
Yeah.
I can't believe I had to do that. But it's over.
All right, Kev.
Did you tell him he's getting a quiz?
I think I told him a little bit, but I think it kind of went over his head.
Well, he listens to the podcast, so he knew.
Of course, he's a diehard listener here.
he knew it was coming.
I do a quiz to all the guests, right? It's a quiz about your life.
There are
tangentially about your life, right? Okay. So,
well, that's a big word, John. We don't use big words like that on our podcast.
I got it. You told me to stay away from polysyllabic words and last time.
Well, now you're out of control.
All right, so eight questions. You have to get the multiple choice, and you have to get 6 out of 8. Because we have a backstage where Burgoyne and Brazier might not fit because I don't know what size we have left. So if Scott Sofen is listening from B2, we need some more shirts. All right. I know you're going to be sweating like you did when you're introducing the king and, or this is a prince
Royal
and princess.
Royal Duke and Duchess.
Royal Duke and Duchess. All right. Are you ready?
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stump you with Brazier's Quiz.
All right. Question number one. You went to Episcopal Academy on City Line Avenue at the time, right? It was in Newtown Square. Mm-hmm. Which of these celebrities did not go to EA? 3 of them went to Episcopal Academy. 1 did not. You got to tell me who's the interloper. Who did not go to EA? Okay. A, Academy Award-winning actor Lionel Barrymore. B, film producer and director M. Night Shyamalan. C, actor Bradley Cooper. D, Bruiser Flint, assistant coach of Kentucky, former head coach of Drexel and UMass.
Bradley Cooper did not go there, but it's funny because the first name you said, I did not.
Lionel Barrymore?
Yeah. No, I thought you'd say throw Ruben in there, but no.
Ruben went to Penn Charter.
Oh, Penn Charter.
That would have been too easy for him.
Of course.
And I did say a GA guy, Bradley Cooper, right? Yeah. So, you're
that's
right.
True.
1 for 1. All right. You had mentioned, we have a lot of rivalries here, Kev, because Episcopal, I went to Hartford. Now, you went to James Madison. I went to UVA. Yeah. All right. So, you went to college at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia, home of Ralph Sampson. Which celeb?
Brother.
Which celeb did not go to JMU? Same concept. 3 went to JMU, 1 did not. Which one did not? Okay. Charles Haley, 5-time Super Bowl champ with the Cowboys and 49ers. Jim Acosta, senior White House correspondent for CNN. G.J. Hart, CEO and president of Red Robin. You like Red Robin, Tom?
Love it.
Yep. Burger. You got good burgers
there.
Hawaiian
burger.
And D is Billy Gibbons, lead singer and guitarist for ZZ Top. So which one did not go?
I'm in trouble now.
So I'll give you again. Charles Haley.
I know Charles Haley went there.
Jim Acosta, G.J. Hart, and Billy Gibbons.
I'm going to go with C.
G.J. Hart?
Yeah.
Well, here's what I would give you that. No, it's Billy Gibbons, the one with the long beard.
I was like, went to college.
I don't think he made it out of grade school, Billy Gibbons.
I don't know where Billy Gibbons went to college. we have a guy I played tennis with one time who has a beard down there, but he's like in his 40s, right?
Yeah.
So we had to play at Philly Cricket, and we had to wear all whites. So I took a picture of this guy in all whites with beard down here, and I put on Facebook, I said, not often you get a chance to have a Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top as your doubles partner. And everyone on Facebook believed it. They're like, oh my God. Meanwhile, Billy Gibbons is like 75 years old, and this guy's like 42. All right. You are one. That's all right. You're 1 for 2. All right. All right. You worked for the Sixers early in your career, as we mentioned. Who has played the most games as a Sixer all time with 1,122 games? Again, played the most games for the Sixers. Is it Hal Greer, Maurice Cheeks, Allen Iverson, or Dolph Schayes?
Hal Greer.
Hal Greer is correct.
Nice.
You are
good
2 for 3. All right. COL, you know Dave Dombrowski.
Oh, boy.
All right. You've worked for Dave Dombrowski with the Red Sox and now the Phillies. I'm going to tell him if you get this wrong, too, so there's a lot of pressure here. You think you had pressure with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex? Right? How about this one? Where did Dave go to college? Do you know it off the top of your head, or do you need the multiple choice?
Western Michigan.
Western Michigan is correct.
Yeah. Bang.
Also went to Western Michigan is the president of the Flyers, Keith Jones. How about that?
Nice tidbit.
All right, so now you are 3 for 4. You're on a good roll right here.
Okay, halfway there.
All right, you worked for the Red Sox, as we mentioned. Who is their all-time home run leader? Do you need multiple choice, or do you want me to give you multiple choice? Is it Ted Williams, Dwight Evans, David Ortiz, or Carl Yastrzemski?
I'm going to say Carl Yastrzemski.
Ted Williams, 521.
Wow.
I got to know that.
Splendid splendid.
Right, that's okay. Wasn't a Philly.
All right, so you got to run the table.
Got to run the table.
Got to get the next 3.
Your dad was the home plate umpire for 2 no-hitters, Ramon Martinez in 1995, and which Phillies pitcher?
Terry Mulholland.
Terry Mulholland,
yeah.
And that's pretty cool, too, that he was home plate umpire for 2 no-hitters. Very
awesome.
Cool. All right, we're going to go into the current day. Who led the Phillies this past year in triples with 6? Who led the Phillies this past year in triples with 6? Is it Brandon Marsh, Trey Turner, JT Realmuto, or Bryson Stott?
I really want to say Trey Turner.
You can use Tom Burgoyne as a lifeline if you want to use it.
No, I'll just say Trey Turner.
Brandon Marsh.
Marsh,
that's Marsh
right.
had
six.
Yeah. Trey had five. That's okay.
I'm doing all the hitting notes.
But you know what? Now I'll give you a reprieve because this one is world geography. Okay?
Okay.
So if you get this one, because it's a hard subject, it's not in your wheelhouse, and I lied and said everything was in your wheelhouse. If you get this one without a lifeline, you win the T-shirt, the coveted T-shirt, backstage with Burgoyne and Brazier. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. The Philly Fanatic is from the Galapagos Islands. Mm-hmm. Which country is the Galapagos Islands part of? Okay, so which country? Is it Colombia, Peru, Chile, or Ecuador?
Ecuador.
Ecuador Bang. Is correct.
Correct.
Hey, you just knew that off the top of your head?
All those books. So
you learned it that way, yeah. Through the books?
I don't know that.
Nice, Kev. Nice work. You've been here way too long, around the Phillies, Kevin.
Tom's been to, technically you've been to Ecuador a couple times.
Yeah, twice to right? the Galapagos. I went back to the homeland for the Fanatic.
What was your favorite part of the Galapagos Islands?
The blue-footed booby. That's easy. Oh, yeah.
Not the giant tortoise?
No, and the sea lions were great.
Yeah.
You could swim with the sea lions. It was awesome.
I can't believe I got two questions wrong, or three questions wrong.
But, three.
Yeah.
You made up for it, though.
Kevin, thanks for coming up. Thanks for helping us with guests over this past season or two, so I really appreciate that.
And can you do me a favor? Can you, if you're ever going to leave the Phillies, which I'm not encouraging you to do because I love working with you, if you're ever going to leave the Phillies, let me know what organization you're going to go to because then I want to go to FanDuel or somewhere and put some money on a Super Bowl, NBA championship, NHL championship, or...
Hey, it's going to happen right here. He's not going anywhere because 2024 is the year, boys.
That's right. I'm here.
All right. Thanks again, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage.